You are listening to Community Radio, WRFG, Atlanta, 89.3 FM, your station for progressive information.
Opinions expressed on WRFG do not necessarily represent the opinions of Radio Free Georgia Broadcasting Foundation, Inc., staff, or volunteers. You are listening to WRFG 89.3 FM, your station for progressive information. And you are listening to Alternative Perspectives, the weekly program about the GLBTQI community, produced by Betty Couvetier. Alternative Perspective is about the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, queer questioning, and intersex community, informing about the issues that affect us and our allies and the common humanity that connects us all. Good evening. This is Alternative Perspectives. My name is Betty, and we have a busy show for you tonight. And on the line already is Officer Harris. We're expecting a couple more phone calls. Hi, Officer Harris. How are you tonight?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Good. We're going to have a conversation about the Eagle, about the raid, about what was said, what was not said. We're going to have opinions about priorities. We have a couple of other callers, including Laura Brown, the editor of Sovo, will be joining us in a minute. And we have Sherry Wolf, the author of Sexuality and Socialism, on tour on the East Coast, and also one of the organizers for the March on Washington for Equality. And she is also interested in hearing about what went on here in Atlanta on the 10th of September. Officer Harris, just hold on 1 minute. Hold on, I'm going to lock you in so I can answer my other phone, okay?
Okay.
And WRFG. Hello?
Yes.
Hi, this is WRFG.
This is Officer Harris.
Oh, you're still on? Oh, yours is off? Okay, I thought I had you on the other line. Okay, let me lock you in up here. Let's find out who's over here. Do we have somebody else on the line?
And Betty, hey, it's Becky Jane.
Oh, Becky, okay, you were on the other line. Okay, all right, so Becky Jane Harrelson, the artist in residence at the Virginia Highlands Church, and later we're going to hear, or sooner, from also Pastor Chris Glosser, who is the author of As My Own Soul. He is in the studio, and we'll be talking to him about his book, about the series that's going on at his church, and same-sex marriage, and the equality about that. Okay, so it's all about equality, and it's all about the equality for the GLBT community. Officer Harris.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on about this raid, a lot of things that are being said, a lot of feelings out there about it, and I want to first congratulate you on being nominated to be the female grand marshal for Pride in October. And also we have the Chris Glosser here, who is the male grand marshal, so congratulations to both of you.
Thank you.
That's exciting. Okay, and but there's controversy about that nomination, but we'll talk about that in a few minutes. And but first, let's hear, you know, what's going on with that raid on the Eagle, and you are the community GLBT liaison for the APD, and you were not included in that. Do we know why?
At this point, we still don't actually know why I was not included. That was my first question. That also was Chief Pennington's first question on why I wasn't included in that. There are some SOP or standard operating procedures that are being changed and looked at right now so that that doesn't happen ever again. It's a little frustrating for me knowing that I should have been notified. Had I been notified, I think there would have been a different outcome had I been there. or been informed in the process or even in the investigation to begin with. So at that point, that's all I can speak on as far as that's concerned. Everything else is under investigation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have the editor of SOVO on the line with us now also. And Laura, is okay I call you by your first name?
Oh, absolutely. Please do.
Okay, Laura. We just had asked, so we're getting some static over the phone here.
Yes.
Folks are on, you're on the cell phone, I assume somebody's on the cell phone.
No, I'm actually on a landline. But
on a landline, okay.
Old school, right?
Is anybody, I don't know, but anybody else on a cell phone?
Betty, I am.
Okay, if we could sort of kind of hold steady on the phone, maybe it'll take it away or move position some. I don't know who it's coming from, so. But anyway, we just asked Officer Harris as to why was she not included in the investigation or the raid on the Eagle. And her response, could you repeat yourself, please, Officer Harris?
Sure. My response is we really don't have an answer as to why I wasn't included in the investigation or in the actual raid itself. That was my question. And again, that was Pennington's question. To begin with, there are some procedural changes being made as we speak that will prevent that from happening ever again in the future.
Mm-hmm. All right. It's strange that, and I don't know how much, you said that we couldn't speak about anything that had to do with the investigation.
Correct.
Okay, but going around that point, you are not being included in the investigation itself either.
Right, and that's where my frustration comes in because I'm not getting any clear-cut answers as to why I wasn't informed. This was something that I should have been informed of.
Because your response to me was that the officers, anyone who was involved in the initial raid, et cetera, investigation or whatever, cannot be included in the investigation itself because I guess there's compromises, you know, whatever it is for the whatever reasons. But, you know, my instant, you know, I said to myself, well, how come you're not being included in the investigation now if you were not part of the proceeding of the stuff that happened before?
Well, what happens is it goes over to OPS, Office of Professional Standards,
mm-hmm.
and once they are involved, anybody named in it, even if I have a complaint,
mm-hmm.
I can come to them from as a complainant,
mm-hmm.
but I cannot be directly involved. That's it. Like, it's almost, although it's part of APD, it's actually independent.
Right.
So the only people that will be involved in that investigation would be the major and the investigating officer himself or herself, and they will then interview everybody.
Mm.
And that is one of the questions, again, that has been addressed another way because it has really nothing to do with the investigation itself, but it has to do with procedures,
mm-hmm.
proper protocol. And that's what the SOP that we're working on now for my unit is going to handle.
Mm. Laura, has SOVO found out anything else that might be able to be spoken about?
Well, since the original reporting that we did on the raid itself, and since the last print issue of the paper, we've been researching and writing continuously on the web and updating on SOVO.com as we find out some information.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the key new developments since last week include, of course, the rally that took place on Saturday, where more than 100 people turned out despite pouring rain that we would all now know would turn into the historic flood of 2009, as we're calling it.
Yeah.
But folks, including Officer Harris, turned out to speak and make their voices heard there. Another interesting development, as you may know, one of the two anonymous complaints that allegedly sparked this raid referred to a residential building near the Eagle and alleged that the Eagle had attempted to retaliate against neighbors by playing tapes of men having sex from their outdoor speakers, which is one of the more extreme claims in those two anonymous complaints.
Mm.
Some residents of that building wrote a public letter to Mayor Franklin denouncing that, saying they had never heard anything like that, and that, in fact, they considered the Eagle to be a good neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
And then lastly, the third big, and I think the biggest development, is that Mayor Shirley Franklin has now spoken out on the raid. After our reporter Matt Schaefer spotted her while both of them were shopping at Home Depot yesterday and took advantage of the opportunity to ask her what she thought of the raid. that may be the only way we were going to get that information, since numerous interview requests through her office had not gotten a response. And basically she said, similar to Chief Pennington, that they plan to investigate all of the allegations about misconduct and then take whatever action they feel is appropriate based on the results of those investigations.
Mm.
So that's the latest as it stands as of right now.
Right. Okay. And we have now Sherry Wolfe is on the line also, and she is the author of Sexuality and Socialism. She is on tour for the East Coast, and she's one of the organizers for the March on Washington for Equality on October the 11th. Hi, Sherry. How are you this evening?
Hi. How are you?
Okay. And we're having the conversation of what's gone on here in Atlanta with the raid on the Eagle, a gay bar, what has happened after it, how did it come about, you know, why did it happen? There's no real answers. We have on the line also Officer Harris, who is the GLBT liaison for the APD here in Atlanta. Becky Harrelson is on the phone, who is the artist in residence at the Virginia Highlands Church, and of course Laura Brown, the editor of Sovo. And in the studio, we have Pastor Chris Glosser, who will be speaking to us more in a little bit about his book, As My Own Soul, Same-Sex Marriage, and again, the word equality comes up. Okay, we're all in that vein and into that subject. And what happened? Why did the police storm the building? Okay, why were the patrons searched and forced to lie on the floor? And why were they detained for so long? These are questions, Officer Harris, if you have answers for them, Laura, if you have answers for them, if you might have found this. These are, you wrote an editorial about the incident, and these are some of the questions you had asked in your editorial.
Right.
Have there been any more answers, that have come, for those particular questions? I mean, how did this happen? How could it happen? We're in the 21st century here, It's like, this is Atlanta.
Right. Yeah. And those questions still remain. There hasn't been any more direct information from the Atlanta Police Department. And I think some of those questions will be answered, hopefully, as part of this investigation. But speaking not from the news side of the newspaper, but as editor, of course, I also do write opinion columns, as you referenced, I think a bigger question that remains as well is not just how the specific raid was conducted, but why this investigation and raid were ever authorized in the first place, given the significant understaffing and concerns about slow police response times to calls within that neighborhood of Atlanta and throughout the city. Why this allocation of resources that, we can take 21 officers to raid a gay bar when, as I wrote in my editorial, even, worst case scenario, if the police had found exactly what they thought they were looking for based on these anonymous complaints, it would have been a bar full of adult men having consensual sex. Mm. Now, it's worth stressing repeatedly that no one was actually arrested on any sex charges. But I think even if they had been, there's a real question of the allocation of our public safety resources and who is safer from the police stopping that from happening, as opposed to reallocating those officers to beats where they could be stopping some of the property crimes and violent crimes that citizens of Atlanta are so concerned about.
Danny, could you give us any kind of information regarding that? I mean, how was this authorized? Do you know at this point?
No, well, actually, the way it pretty much works is, anytime a complaint comes in to the police department or to the mayor's office, it is then sent to the proper chain of command, which means, in this case, it went through what we call our one of the investigative units, which would be Major Williams, who heads over intelligence. She, or it can go through the zone as well, which is that zone is Zone 5, and it can go through the zone command of Major Kyrus Williams, but it actually went through Major Deborah Williams, and so being a major with that status, she can, put together the investigation and authorize the personnel and things like that nature, and also asking for assistance from other units, like in this case, Red Dog units.
A Red Dog. Can you explain what Red Dog is to the audience who might not know?
Red Dog is they're our running every drug dealer out of Georgia task force. And what they do is they were actually, from what it was stated, they were only used not for the drug task force that they normally operate in, but they were actually just needed for the backup in uniform officers. So they were used as the uniform officers, not the non-undercover that went in.
And a question that I had, you know, just I was just wondering when I was told that there had been a computer, a laptop set up in the bar to do background checks, and they did them on the 62 patrons that were in there. How is this possible? I mean, why? I mean, how can the police, for no known cause, put you on the ground and then run a background check on you for no probable cause? Why? I mean, if Danny, if you have an answer for that, or Laura, if you have found out anything on that?
I because of the investigative part, I won't be able to answer that question.
Okay. All right.
That will be something that's directly involved in the investigation.
That's an investigation. Okay. Becky, do you have any questions that you might want to ask?
Well, I was going to ask Officer Harris, is the raid on the Eagle, the way in which it was conducted, is that standard operating procedure? Because there were other raids conducted on straight bars that were discussed. And I was just wondering, were they handled in the same manner? Do you happen to know Officer Harris?
I will say this. When it comes to us going in, a lot of things are taken into consideration, and even the tactics are done by the unit itself. Standard is really not the proper word, for the simple reason that there are different entities that go into every investigation. So whether or not going into the Eagles bar or going into Wolf's or going into, it has a lot to do with the layout of the place, the amount of people inside the establishment, as well as, you know, there's so many things that go into that. So to say standard is a really hard word to utilize when it comes to tactics used by police.
Chris, do you... Laura?
Oh, I was just going to say, I think there would still be significant questions about this raid, even if they use a similar sort of MO on all raids. There are these complaints that have now been filed officially, as we've discussed, with the Office of Professional Standards, alleging anti-gay slurs heard from officers during this particular raid. So even if it were standard police procedure to raid bars in this manner, gay or straight, there are these additional questions and allegations about the treatment of the gay patrons that shouldn't be lost in the shuffle.
The
and
shuffle.
I would also argue that, again, the question of resource allocation is really key, and how many staff hours APD should be devoting to essentially victimless crimes as opposed to crimes that more directly threaten the well-being and the daily lives of citizens in the city.
Yeah. For instance, there hasn't been any solution or on the murders in Piedmont Park and the stabbings.
Correct. At least that we've learned about.
But we don't know. I mean, we don't. Is there any news? Are there any updates on that, Danny? On the Piedmont?
Last I heard, no. They were still working some angles.
Still under investigation.
Yes.
This is Sherry. Can I ask a question?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm not a diplomat, and I'm not a politician.
Uh-huh.
I'm a writer, and I'm an activist. And I'm sort of outraged listening to this, because I feel like there's a lot of euphemisms and justifications being thrown around.
Mm-hmm.
When is the police department of the city of Atlanta going to give a full, square, unequivocal apology for what happened, swear this will never happen again, take action against the senior officer who authorized basically a terrorist campaign against a bunch of gay people partying in a bar for no apparent reason, even if they thought there were drugs being dealt? That's not the way drug dealing is ordinarily dealt with in bars. This is just a little bit, a couple of weeks have passed. And saying that there is an investigation underway really doesn't quite cut the mustard for me.
Mm-hmm. What do you say? I mean, Laura or Danny, you have answers for that? Anybody from?
I mean, I understand the frustration, and speaking, you know, I understand, you know, your frankness. I actually respect your frankness in what you're saying. I definitely wish that I could stand in front of Channel 2, 11, 5, CNN, 46, and give that apology and it be accepted. But in all actuality, if I was to do that, it still wouldn't be accepted. Because, number one, I wasn't part of it, you know?
Right.
So it is very difficult for me to be in the position that I am, because you want to talk about being in between a rock and a hard place?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Not standing in my shoes.
Yeah, because, I mean, I know that from the Facebook blogs and stuff that's been happening, like from yesterday or whatever, when it was announced that you are the female grand marshal for Pride in October, some of the remarks have been that the APD should not be honored or celebrated at our Pride.
I really want to address that. Mm-hmm. I did get a phone call today in reference to some of those remarks being made, and it disheartens me for the simple reason that I've spent 4.5 years building relationships with the community, and for one event on one evening to pretty much tear down everything that I have done is disheartening, you know, to say the least. And then on top of that, it's hard when I'm being, a lot of the slurs that's being thrown is really not being thrown at Danny Lee Harris. It's really being thrown at the Blue and at the Shield, you know, and it's hard for people to decipher the fact that I'm a person that cares about this community, that I am a part of this community, and I have a lot of frustrations and anger as well, but also not being angry at the uniform. I mean, we will hold people accountable, but don't give me the backlash of everybody's frustration when it comes to the department, because it is such a bad thing to lump everybody together under one umbrella when you have so many different entities and so many different people and so many different personalities. My integrity supersedes me. And I will say that, and I will continue saying that. My integrity is what I live by, and that's what I actually want to leave as an impression on people when I come out of their presence. So, and I've done that for 4.5 years, so it's really difficult to hear and swallow some of the remarks that's being made. You know, are you kidding me? You know, you're going to honor APD?
Well, right.
What about the work that I've done?
I just want to add this, that this is not about honoring APD. It's about honoring the individual, the person that has done the work. Okay, and in this case, you happen to be Officer Harris. Okay, but you are Danny, Harris. Okay, and you know, I know you. I've worked with you. And I know that you are, you know, involved in the community. But I want to send a message out to the community. And it's like, let's not allow these things that are happening to divide us. Okay? Because if we start pointing fingers at each other because you need somebody to give responsibility to or something, or that you're looking for somebody to blame, or because you can't explain what's happened, or, you know, you're trying to understand it, don't point the finger at the one who's closest to you, okay? And this we tend to do in all aspects of our lives, I think, which prevents us from getting to where we need to be, okay? Because if we hold those who are in charge and those who make the decisions, okay, if we hold them accountable, find out who they are, okay? Because there is a power structure, okay? There is a power structure. This is what we live under. There are those who make the decisions and those of us who just live by them, okay? So and Danny, we, you know, you're part of us. You live by those decisions also, okay? So let us, you know, let not my community point fingers at you, but, you know, it's almost election time, okay? Vote for those folks that are going to help the community. Find out who they are, what they're willing to do, okay? How they're going to work for the DLBT and get those resolutions and those amendments and those laws made that will protect us, okay? Let us not point fingers at each other, okay? Because that's what they want. You know, it's the old little cliche that is divide and conquer, all right? And we're allowing it to happen every day in our lives. We allow it to happen, and I say stop, think, all right, and see where it is and who's responsible, okay? Then hold those people accountable. That's what I say. We have a voice here, on WRFG. We have Sovo, who's on the line. You know, we have Danny Harris, who is our LGBT liaison for the GLBT community. We have Becky on the line. We have Sherry on the line. We have Chris in the studio. We are all voices in our own way. Okay, we get the message out there. We have to combine that message, all right, and send it out as a, you know, bang. You know, this is what we must do. Stop pointing fingers at each other, though. Okay, that's my message to my community. Stop pointing fingers. Chris, do you have something that you want to say?
Danny, I think you would make a great preacher.
A preacher? Wait, say that again.
I think you would make a great preacher. That was a great sermon.
Oh, Lord.
I'm ready to take an offering.
All right, take an offering. Okay,
that
pass
was great.
The basket.
I agree entirely. And I think Officer Harris is to be commended for mm-hmm. coming on the show, for addressing all of these things. Because as one who has a pastor in a church, you know, a lot of times people who are gay and Christian also get scapegoated for mm-hmm. what the church mm-hmm. has done to all of us.
Right.
When, in fact, we're trying to correct the church. We're trying to reform the church, just as Officer Harris is trying to reform the APD. So I think you're absolutely right. So mm-hmm. amen and amen.
Okay, thank you. Preacher. I'm going to be a preacher now. No. No, but I admire, see, my admiration for all of you, because none of us, yeah, my saying has always been, I'm a late bloomer when it comes to my activism. I was 50 plus, okay? I'm 61 now, almost 62, but, you know, most of you have been out there a whole lot longer than me as far as activism, not an age, but, in that short time, though, a lot of stuff has come my way. And I've noticed that we always do the same thing. We point the finger at the person who's the nearest one, who we can, you know, relate to, as far as saying, okay, well, you didn't do this. Well, you know, there are those other ones that we need to hold accountable. So for some reason, we're afraid. I mean, I don't know. Is that, you know, are we afraid? Is that, you know, stop being afraid. Yeah, whatever. However that fear comes into play, we need to stop it. We need to
now,
stop
Betty,
it.
Betty, this is Becky Jane. If I might be able to interject here and say that, you know, Officer Harris was not involved in the
right.
raid.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really, you know, it's really not right to beat up on Officer Harris.
No, it's not. And I, you know, I was going to make a posting on the Facebook, but then I said, no. Well, I'll just say it on the radio show, and since I podcast it, then I can podcast the whole show, you know, to get the message across. And you know, it's a shame to see that. You know, it makes me very sad, you know, when I see that people just want to scapegoat the nearest person who's, you know, they feel is responsible. If Danny was there, maybe it would have been a little different. You know, maybe things wouldn't have developed the way they did. You know,
I promise you, the whole scenario would have been different.
But yeah, you know, then that's why people don't look at that. You know, I mean, she said she was not included. You know, she did not know. She has asked the question. Nobody has given her the answers. Let us give her. You know, let's believe her. I mean, she is one of our community. Okay, let us believe her. Okay, and you know, and go from there. And that they won't even give her the answers now, as far as what the investigation is. You know, so you know, there's a lack, and what we have to do is hold those responsible who are doing the investigation and those higher ups who have made the decision to do how they've done it, starting with the mayor, maybe. You know what I mean? Because she, you know, she sort of kind of is in control of all these people. They all sort of kind of work for her, I'm assuming, okay? I mean, I'm not sure of the hierarchy here, but I think that the mayor is the chief. You know, she's the one in charge, okay? So she gives out the orders, and she says this is how this is going to be handled, and they go to it, okay? So let's ask those people who make those decisions, okay, what happened? What went wrong, okay? And how are you going to stop this from happening again, okay? And then get answers for everything else that's happening, okay? The stabbings, you know, all the criminal activity that's going on in that same area. Just find out from those who are running for office who's going to answer those questions for us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You know, it's a lot of stuff, you know. It's a lot of stuff, and we need to get answers, and we the people need to take responsibility to get those answers. You know, that's my viewpoint. Yeah. And Sherry, I wanted to get to you about your tour and You're going. You're traveling the East Coast.
Yes, I am. I'm in Boston now and heading down to Gainesville in the morning, and I'll be making my way to Atlanta on Saturday, where I'm speaking at Georgia State University at 3:30 p.m.
Okay.
The
name of your book is...
It is Sexuality and Socialism, and you can find all the stops on the tour at haymarketbooks.org.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and you're also one of the organizers of the March on Washington, October the 11th?
Exactly. On the 10th of October, there are a series of workshops and various other activities. And then on October 11th, beginning at noon, there is a march, and at 2 p.m., a rally in Washington, D.C. And you can find out all the specifics at equalityacrossamerica.org. It's called the National Equality March.
Okay.
And I think that exactly what has happened at the Eagle Bar or at the Rainbow Lounge a few months earlier on the anniversary of the Stonewall riots back in Fort Worth, Texas, and even other incidents that have happened elsewhere in Silver Springs, Maryland, recently, where two black lesbians were tossed out of Tasty Diner for having the audacity to touch each other while they were paying their bill. I think those things are not new. What is new is a posture of a new movement that's saying enough is enough. We're not going to take this anymore. We're fighting back,
right,
and we're going to demand our full civil equality, and that's what this march is about.
All right. I mean, I'm excited about that. Here in Atlanta, Chris Glosser, the church, the Virginia Highlands Church, is having a series of events on the same-sex marriage and the equality for the LGBT community on that score. And I want to roll into the conversation with him, but I would like for you all to stay on the phone because I think you can all add to the conversation regarding these events that are going to be happening, because they're also they're relating the events have been put together to sort of kind of coincide and have Atlanta participating in the this big event, the March on Washington. Is that correct?
It's a both and. There was a lot of passion around marriage equality at the church, and actually two straight couples really spearheaded this group of people, gay and straight, organizing a marriage equality team to do a series of classes to acquaint the congregation and the community with some of the issues that we face in terms of marriage equality and other issues of equality.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a lineup of speakers and a film we're going to show Before the Bible Tells Me So this Friday at 7 p.m. And I'm doing a book signing at Outright Book for As My Own Soul, The Blessing of Same-Gender Marriage, which is an argument for spiritual institutions to welcome same-gender marriage as well as civil institutions. And so it's quite a lineup. We have Daniel Helmaniak, Reverend Dr. Kathy Martin, Reverend Dr. Aaron Swenson, who's going to present a transgender view, and Mr. Winston Johnson, who interestingly enough was the initial reason the Coretta Scott King came on board for LGBT equality.
Way back when.
And he's a great, he's an interesting person.
Yes, he is. So. Yeah, he's been on the show. Yeah. I want, you know, Sherry, I'm reading a book. I haven't been able to finish it because there's a lot of historical data in there, okay, regarding socialism, communism, and I keep going back and rereading stuff because I want to fully understand the dynamics, the dimensions, you know, the perspectives of all of that history that most of us really are not aware of when it comes to homosexuality, okay? And it's, you know, in that communist world, I was intrigued by that section where before Stalin, it was during the Bolshevik, before the Bolshevik
revolution,
homosexuals actually had their rights in Russia?
Yes, and there were sex change operations, there was equal marriage rights, and all the rest of that. The book is highly readable, I think, and I've gotten a lot of feedback on the road. And I one of the reasons I wrote it, and I'm not an academic, I come from an activist background, I read voraciously, is that I felt that so much that is out there, first of all, there was no unabashed socialist history, politics, and theoretical take on what the hell has happened, and how did we go from a movement to a market niche and all the rest of it. That was even at all, you know, that wasn't impenetrable and written in sort of crazy
academic language. So mm-hmm. it's highly accessible to people. It's $12. It's also as cheap as we could humanly make it.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to take on questions of, like, the construction of homosexuality. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, gay sex has always existed throughout human history, but when did your sexual orientation become a salient feature of your being? There is a beginning of that,
mm-hmm.
In the same way that there was the beginning of race as a construction. Of course, there have always been black people and brown people, but the idea that this is a separate kind of person who want to be treated differently, that's a very modern conception. And so I go through a lot of that in the book.
Mm. Chris, you take it from the biblical historical viewpoint. I read your book, and mm-hmm. it's relating, you know, back to the in the Bible and the things that how things are interpreted. Okay.
Yes, it includes the biblical it includes biblical arguments, but it also includes historical arguments.
Mm-hmm.
For the first 1,000 years, the church was not interested in marriage. It wasn't until in 1215 that the first that marriage was recognized as a sacrament in the church, and the reason being that celibacy was considered the higher value, the higher good in church history, because they were anticipating the imminent return of Jesus or the reign of God coming in. They thought things were going to come to a close, and so marriage was not very important to them. And I think this would be a surprise to many Christians for whom this has become such a pivotal Christian doctrine of
mm-hmm.
marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the Protestant Reformation occurred, Protestants thought the state should regulate it. They didn't. They had some advice to give and some spiritual counsel, and they wanted to do blessings, but they really looked for the nation states developing in Europe to regulate the institution of marriage. And then, of course, the Enlightenment further separated it from its sacred source. And in the Enlightenment, of course, it was understood as simply a contract between two people, which is how we pretty much understand it in the United States today.
Mm.
But there is still this notion in people's minds that there is some sacred origin to marriage. And so they do like to go back to the Bible and pull out text there, when, interestingly enough, the most described relationships of intimacy are between one between David and Jonathan, and the other between Ruth and Naomi, and their love for one another are highlights of the Hebrew scriptures. And when Jesus came on the scene, you know, he didn't care about family at all. He called the disciples away from their families. He did not form a family. Who are my mother and brothers and sisters but those who do the will of God? So the family of faith gained ascendancy over the biological family. Mm. So all of this stuff from many Christians that the family, you know, is under attack, and that this is a Christian value, that this is a traditional value, they would be horrified to see what families look like back in, you know, just 1,000 years ago, or 1,500 years ago, where the man was in charge and had sexual access to everyone in the household, including children and servants and slaves. And this is not the kind of family we want to return to. This mm-hmm. is, and of course, in the Hebrew scriptures, you had polygamy was the common practice as well. And I don't think that that's the kind of traditional marriage that many Christians who are opposing same-gender marriage would like to return to either.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I also make a point of not referring to gay marriage, because it seems to me that when the media refers to gay marriage, they don't say straight marriage as opposed to gay marriage. They talk about marriage and gay marriage as if gay marriage is somehow lesser than.
Yeah.
So throughout the book, I refer to opposite gender and same gender marriage, because it really is about gender.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so about sex. Marriage is not so much about sex as it is about commitment.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the way I describe it. And there are a couple of reasons, I think, that make this issue is such a gut issue for so many people. And one is that there are two taboos involved. First, a negative taboo about sexuality in the body, because
mm-hmm.
we don't feel good about being embodied creatures. Mm-hmm. And the other is a taboo around the sacred, that what is holy shouldn't be touched. And that's a good taboo. And so I talk about these taboos, how we have come to a different understanding of sexuality. In fact, many strains of Christianity came to a wholly different understanding and affirming understanding of sexuality and the body, such as Celtic Christianity. And so that we have other avenues for understanding and reevaluating this negative taboo about the human body and about sexuality. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side, I do think that marriage is a sacred trust between two people. In fact, I mm-hmm. ultimately conclude it's like a little monastery where it is a training ground for spiritual development. It's a place where you learn how to love yourself and to love your lover mm-hmm. as well. And so I think that it's a spiritually transforming experience to be in relationship in that kind of intimate way.
Mm. Okay, I'm gonna say, as just a regular lay person myself, and a recovering Catholic. I was going to say alcoholic, no. A Catholic, okay? I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued reading your book, Sherry. I was intrigued reading Chris's book, because one end it was coming from the religious aspect, the other end is coming from, you're also a historical, but Sherry has a definite, you know, going back to the socialism and communism, which we in this country see that as, you know, you say communist, atheist, socialism. I mean, we're seeing it now with the healthcare issues, that it's a no-no. I mean, you know,
I think we have to define who we're talking about for whom it is a no-no.
Mm-hmm.
Because according to the Rasmussen poll, which, by the way, is not at all a progressive outfit,
mm-hmm.
A third of people under the age of 30 believe that socialism would be superior
mm-hmm.
to capitalism. And I think that this sort of 1952 McCarthyite, ideology that's being, you know, beaten at us from the far reaches of the right, you know, mm-hmm, on Fox mm-hmm, News, mm-hmm, Glenn Beck, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah, the teabaggers, etc., they're trying to make hay out of something that is literally older than, you know, a fair proportion, if not the majority of the population of the United States.
Right.
And that is not my experience as I go around the country and travel and speak on a book called Sexuality and Socialism. I'm speaking often to packed audiences. So clearly this is not a repellent to many, many people. And I might add that the Republicans, in particular Sarah Palin, perhaps the most incurious individual who ever walked the planet, tried to use socialism to paint, you know, Obama in red colors, and it clearly did not work terribly well for her in the campaign. So I think we have to sort of stop talking about it as if we are living in 1952.
Okay. And I'm saying this is where I go in my head, because that's the history that I'm familiar with. You know, I'm 61 years old, you know, and I was, you know, back in the 50s and stuff, I was in, you know, teenage years, going into my teenage years, and there was a lot of talk about, you know, this kind of stuff, you know. And that's what I remember, you know.
Right.
And I'm saying, okay, so now how do we convince people? Now, I'm a lesbian, Puerto Rican, from New York, you know, who's come south, you know. I was born on the Lower East Side around the Jewish tradition, okay. Then we moved to Brooklyn, and I was with the Irish and the Italian, and so forth and so on. I went to school, and I was, you know, hanging with, you know, with black friends from downtown Brooklyn and whatnot. So, I mean, how do we put things so you get folks who have not had that diversity in their life, okay, that have not been exposed to a whole lot of other stuff other than what they know, okay? Now they're being thrown all this information, supposedly, you know, from the religious right, for instance, about how bad it is to be a homosexual, how we cannot support same-sex marriage, how are you going to let these bad folks, these deviants, have the same rights as you? Okay, then we think back, you know, to the communist days and when Russia was our number one enemy, okay? And that's what we associated communism with, okay?
Right.
And now all of a sudden, socialism is coming up as being the answer to all the problems that we're having here now, you know? So, I mean, how do you get all this information out to folks, okay? How do you explain to them what it is that's happening? Are they accepting it? Are they not accepting it? Even the church, for instance, you have churches that accept and churches that don't, you know, that don't. So how do we reconcile those differences? How do we come to those terms of, you know, supposedly, you know, the church preaches that, you know, Jesus loves us all. We're all the, you know, his children. So if you preach that, how can you not, you know, accept the fact that we exist, you know, and that we're part of society, you know, and, you know, and
when especially when Jesus' ministry was to all the religious outcasts of his time and the political outcasts of his time. Those were the people he hung out with. That's why he got into trouble with the religious leadership and the political leadership.
So there's something in hanging out. I mean, it's confusing. I mean, you know, I try to, you know, open myself up to this stuff because I do what I do, you know, and it's like, okay, you know, so how do you get people to understand it? I mean,
I think we have to distinguish what's being argued here, because I have zero defense of the gulag under Stalin. That has nothing to do with socialism,
right,
in my opinion.
Okay.
Or, you know, or even, you know, Cuba and China and all of that.
Mm-hmm,
they use
mm-hmm.
socialist verbiage to justify, frankly, the unjustifiable, totalitarian mm-hmm. regimes and all the rest.
Right.
The genuine liberatory core of Marxism or socialism is about uniting the oppressed and exploited to, you know, have a world run in the interest of human need as opposed to profit.
Right.
It's just that radical.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, Jesus actually seems to have advocated something rather similar. I'm a fallen Jew, but I have taken a gander at the Bible here and there, and it seems to me that has something to do with what he was talking about thousands of years ago. And I just think that there is an enormous audience for these ideas in an era in which neoliberalism certainly privatized everything under the sun, throw billions at bankers, you know, leave no banker left behind. This system is becoming discredited.
Opposed to the children.
Millions and millions of people have worked. You know, Michael Moore is about to release a film October 2nd. I can't wait for it, called Capitalism, A Love Story. And
wow.
And it takes the piss out of this system and says, hey, our system doesn't work. A profit-driven system doesn't work, and we need to look to a different kind of society.
Yeah, but how do we get through? You say the system doesn't work, okay? And both, you know, for both of you, Chris and Sherry, and the rest of you on the line there, Danny, Becky, and Laura. I mean, how do we get? I mean, to that point of people being able to determine the differences. In other words, what you just spoke about, that there's a difference in that, you know, with the Stalin stuff and the stuff prior. Why is it that we're not taught that? I mean, I remember reading Marx, you know, but, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of conversation about what it all meant. We read the book. We might have discussed it, you know, but, I mean, you know, we're not taught things in this country that we should learn.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and why is that? Does anybody have an answer for that? I mean, you know.
I think one thing that could be done is to show positive examples of you know, whether it's a religious community, spiritual community, or a political system. For mm-hmm. example, socialism. We have social programs that are similar, you know, draw their inspiration from an understanding of socialism, such mm-hmm. as Medicare and Social Security. That's
let's continue this conversation on, you know, how do we, you know, religion, politics. I mean, you know, in my head it's like, okay, so how do we think about the situation? How do we when we talk to people, you know, how do we convince or try to give them the information or show them or however, you know. Becky, you do your stuff on the canvas.
Yes.
Yeah.
Through artwork, through iconography.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of come at it from the approach that symbols kind of permeate our subconscious mind and our culture.
Mm-hmm.
and they become the mechanism, or Carl Jung actually said something to the effect that the symbol was the psychological mechanism for transformation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I have taken up the artwork, being somewhat of an activist with doing paintings of LGBT narratives or feminist narratives that reimagine some of the teachings of Jesus in contemporary about contemporary issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I can address same gender marriage with a painting like the Madonna Lover and Son.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can address the shame of or our society's shame put on sexuality in a painting like Judas Kiss. So, you know, I come at it from a visual, you know, because pictures can say so much in an instant to people, as opposed to, I'm not saying you shouldn't read books.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly with Chris and Sherry's books, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems that you can really get to people's essence of feelings about an issue if you can put a picture in front of them and their reaction to it.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not they react positively or negatively, it really has more to do, not about me, but more about the viewer of the artwork and their interaction with it, and see where they are on the continuum of understanding that we are all the beloved, that we are all equal.
Hmm. All right. And Sherry, when you've spoken, you've been out there speaking and whatnot. What are your feelings? I mean, what's going on out there? How are people viewing the GLBT situation, or they're asking for equal rights, and how are people viewing the march? And
there's deep impatience, and this march, because it doesn't sort of just say we're just about same-sex marriage, or just about ending Don't Ask, Don't Tell, or just about workplace non-discrimination. It says, look, enough is enough. You know, this is our Rosa Parks moment. We want it all. We want to sit at the front of the bus. We want
mm-hmm.
all of our rights.
Mm-hmm.
There is a deep impatience, and I think it's what one of the things that is driving, in particular, a lot of younger folks, a younger generation that has grown up accustomed to a sort of cultural explosion in which gay and gender variant, you know, lives are portrayed on the screen and TV, and yet the laws remain utterly backward and
mm-hmm.
reactionary. And I think that people are just sick and tired of this incrementalist strategy, and that's what the march on Washington on October 11th is really about. It's about giving voice, giving expression to this, you know, sort of new posture, if you will, of combativity and disgust with this approach that frankly hasn't worked for decades. So, you know, somebody once said that lunacy is defined by doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome. Well, let's stop the lunacy. Let's do something different. Let's make a demand for all of our rights.
Mm-hmm.
And the worst thing that could happen is they say no, and we have to continue to fight. We've been fighting anyway.
Right.
So why don't we fight at least this time for something we really want?
Mm-hmm. Chris, you said there was a lot of interest here at your church.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and your church is mixed. Is it straight and gay?
Straight and gay, black and white.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and you're getting the same feel? That this something has to be done.
There's a great deal of impatience.
Mm-hmm.
That it really is time for marriage equality. It's time for everything.
The hate crimes.
Yeah,
the
hate crimes.
Don't ask, don't tell.
All of that. It's mm-hmm. just like this is as the Rich Wall, who is a Baptist minister, who's heading one of the leads in this marriage equality program, says that this is the civil rights movement of our era. And not to in any way compare the African-American civil rights movement, I always refer to that separately, but that's how strongly people of Virginia Highland Church feel about this, that if we don't stand up now, we are no better than those whites that didn't stand up in support of the civil rights movement.
Mm. Sherry, I wanted to ask you a question, because I know in the book you talk about the myth of the homophobia in the black community. What do you mean by that? Because I mean, here in Atlanta, we've had a lot of discussions on that topic, and it seems to be very real, you know, in the black church. At least people, when they talk about it, and they feel the alienation and you know, the having to be closeted and so forth and so on, for, and, you know, not wanting to be ostracized from that church and their families. What exactly are you, you know, referring to?
Well, I think, you know, a lot came out about, you know, that blacks were to blame for Prop 8 passing in California and all the rest of that. And frankly, actually, if you look statistically, I know that, there's black homophobia, there's white homophobia. And I find it very interesting that people start talking about the black church before they talk about the Catholic church, which it strikes me has a great deal more power and money. And yet, if you look statistically, and in fact, there was a study done out of Georgia State a few years ago, that found that blacks appear to be more likely than whites both to see homosexuality as wrong and to favor gay rights law. So many people may get the heebie-jeebies about what two women or two men do in the sack, but when it comes to being for civil rights legislation, when it's posed in those explicit and unapologetic terms, have come down in favor for it. In fact, by margins that are negligible statistically, within 2 percentage points of whites on a whole range of issues. Mm-hmm. And in fact, when it comes to things like hate crimes legislation, including LGBT people, 71% of African Americans approve. Mm-hmm. And so I just think that we need to move away from these false explanations for why we don't have civil rights. It's not because blacks are somehow, you know, which first of all, of course, is 12% of the population in the United States, but it's not because blacks are somehow holding gays back.
Right.
It's a false explanation.
Yeah, whatever.
And they're not even more homophobic than white people.
Isn't this not, again, another way of dividing us?
Yes, well, that's just my point. Yeah, that's just my point. I was going back to saying, okay, but I think that was a tactic that was used after the fact. I apologize for the interruption. The last few minutes of the show, there was a technical mishap, and I have added on the information of the events coming up this weekend. So here it is. Sherry Wolf will be in town on Saturday, the author of Sexuality and Socialism.
And I'll be making my way to Atlanta on Saturday, where I'm speaking at Georgia State University at 3:30 p.m.
Okay.
Virginia Highlands Church, a UCC and Baptist congregation, launches a Sunday series on marriage equality that runs through October 25th. In addition to the Sunday services held 9:30 a.m. to 10 a.m., additional events associated with the series include a screening of the film For the Bible Tells Me So, on September 25th at 7 p.m., and a book signing for Pastor Chris Glosser's As My Own Soul, The Blessing of Same-Gender Marriage.